You are listening to 93.3 CFMU, redefining radio from McMaster University in Hamilton.
Poo is just a part of a cycle.
Welcome to Radio Free School.
My name is Ian Kerr Wilson, curator of the Hamilton Museum of Steam and Technology. Sitting pretty, it's a history of the toilet from almost prehistory, certainly 4,000 BC, right up to the modern day and where we're going with toilets. So it's a look at not just the sort of technology of it, but the meaning of toilets in our society. You had a range of options. Of course, most people would have used a pit privy, call it what you want, outhouse biff, basically just a hole in the ground that you build some kind of cover over and a seat. And those were used both in rural areas, but even in urban areas right into the 19th century. If you're a little more flush, shall we say, you might have actually had a flush toilet even hundreds of years ago, although you wouldn't necessarily recognize them as flush toilets. Basically what you had was some kind of reservoir of water that you basically used to rinse out the container, or you used a commode, which was basically like a chamber pot only had a seat over top of it, and that was cleaned out by your servants. Of course, the vast majority of people didn't have servants, so they used some variety of privy. But as cities grew as a result of urbanization or industrialization, as you got more and more complex cities, more people living there, people who also had a little bit more resources, you started having public water systems, and with the public water system, the flush toilet was possible, but it was also now necessary, because without them, cities were essentially too polluted and too disease-ridden to live in. There's an interesting statistic that until the mid-19th century, there were just enough people moving into cities to meet the demand for jobs as there were dying of disease. So if it wasn't for the constant influx of people, cities would have basically disappeared. All forms of mortality were higher than the birth rate. So you had to have people coming in until the 19th century, when cities started to become healthy. And they became healthy because you had a water system and you had a way of getting rid of the human sewage. Right through, in most cities, right through into the 20th century, all you really had to do was find some way of diverting this sewage from what people were drinking to make the cities a reasonably healthy place. The 20th century was some of the more complex things, that complex pollutants, chemical pollutants. That's when you start having other problems. You start people worrying about the complex chemicals they're drinking, and you start getting into water treatments. That's really a 20th century phenomenon. the concept goes back hundreds of years, but it wasn't widely used. There wasn't really a lot of need for it, and also not really a full recognition of what water treatment was doing for you. People liked to have the water treated because it tasted better. Still full of pollutants, but it tasted okay. Now into the 20th century, you know, we have a little better idea what the chemistry of water is, and some of the more cutting-edge water treatments are, in fact, producing quite clean water. But they have they're facing more and more complex challenges every day. And we waste water, and flush toilets are a big contributor to that. And, you know, we send a lot of this waste out. And a lot of it is you know, we don't really have any, what's getting into the waste stream, we don't really have a lot of control on necessarily. No, efforts are being made to change that, to improve the efficiency of toilets and to divert a lot of material that we can even in fact make use of, either by trapping methane or in composting or whatever. And that's, if you will, is the next generation.
But it's still true that the water we drink is also the water we discharge our bodily.
Absolutely, absolutely. But, you know, there are, and this is the very cutting edge stuff now, there are forms of water treatment, you know, think of the folks on the space shuttle. They're taking their waste and they're treating it and they're reusing it. That kind of technology can, at least in theory, be scaled up to city size. That's really cutting edge stuff now. That's not something you see everywhere. That's probably where we're going. And 150 years from now, somebody will do an exhibit on the toilet and we'll be laughing and pointing at this quaint thing we did in 2002.
Faucets are dripping in old New York City. The faucets are dripping and oh, what a pity. The reservoir's drying because it's supplying the faucets that drip in New York. You can't ask the landlord to put in the washer. He'd rather you'd move than to put in the washer. The faucets are dripping, they sound in my ears. The tap in the bathroom's been running for years. The faucets are dripping in old New York City. The faucets are dripping and oh, what a pity. The reservoir's drying because it's supplying the faucets that drip in New York. There's a wild streak of green in the sink in the kitchen. It comes from the rill trickling out of the plumbing. The streams from the mountains, the pools from the lea, all run from my faucet and down to the sea. The faucets are dripping in old New York City. The faucets are dripping and oh, what a pity. The reservoir's drying because it's supplying the faucets that drip in New York. You can't ask the landlord to put in the washer. You can't ask the landlord to mend the old stairs. He takes in the rents and he lives in Miami, where faucets don't drip and there's sun everywhere. The faucets are dripping in old New York City. The faucets are dripping and oh, what a pity. The reservoir's drying because it's supplying the faucets that drip in New York. The faucets are dripping, the landlord's content.
You are listening to Radio Free School.
Hi, my name's Brooklyn. We gave you the chance to water the plants. We didn't mean that way. Now they water your plants.
Well, we've got some artifacts over here. This is the traditional commode kind of thing, which you can see is very similar to. These are the chamber pots of one kind or another. One interesting idea is toilets are an interesting technology in the sense that they tell us a lot about our values, and we have a really conflicted view of toilets. I mean, you know, when I tell people we've got this history of the toilet exhibit on, they all laugh. And yet, of course, it's this ubiquitous technology. I mean, we all have them, and yet we laugh about it. And we want to be very discreet. And so here we have, you know, we have a chamber pot here, which has a little thing that looks almost like a tea cozy on it. That's to muffle the sound, right? So nobody knows that you've used it. And yet at the same time, we also have this chamber pot is being produced, say, you know, early 19th century. We also have the beginnings of the water closets, the beginning of the toilets. And these enormously elaborate, almost look like, you know, these toilets almost look like water fountains. So we're torn both ways. We almost want to celebrate it because of what it says about cleanliness and what it says about ourselves, about our cleanliness and about our health. But at the same time, we also want to be very, very discreet about it. You know, and we want to make sure, we want a toilet that makes no sound. And I was talking to part of this exhibit. I was talking to a gentleman who's in the plumbing business. He was talking about the fact that, you know, toilets used to be, and even as recently as 10 years ago, you know, toilets were very plain and unadorned, and people bought the cheapest toilet they could possibly get. But in very recent years, you start seeing enormously elaborate ones that are, that play music and have fans and their bidets built in. And if you think about the way in which we've changed the way we think about washrooms in general, bathrooms in general, even 10 or 20 years ago, they were the forgotten room in the house, right? Nobody bothered to really decorate them, right? You got real elaborate. You painted it yellow and you got a yellow fixture. Wow, that was amazing. Now, of course, there are these things that are from the Roman baths, practically. They're incredible. And toilets have come along with that. And they're now very, very elaborate. And that's part of, again, of our kind of conflicted view of toilets. I sometimes talk about toilets as being an invisible technology, because of course they are a technology, and just like your clothes are a technology, and the more obvious stuff like computers. Invisible in the sense we don't think about them, we don't think about the values that are embedded in them, and the fact that they are part of a larger system of technologies, what historians of technology actually call technological systems, because embedded in with the thing itself, the artifact, are values that we have about cleanliness, and values that we have about public health, and values that we have about the privacy of our persons. But it also connects into a whole other set of technologies around water supply and sewage treatment and issues about what governments do and versus what the private sector does. So the toilet is just the front end of it all, shall we say. And change any of these values, change any of the connections, and the thing itself will change. Okay. So you go from these very plain toilets where nobody cared whether you use 5 gallons or 10 gallons, now to high-tech postmodernist stuff. And the value has changed. The technology, and so the thing itself changes. Toilet paper is kind of an obvious thing. But on the other hand, you've got to think about the cost associated with producing paper in the 19th century, right? Where people, if you've ever picked up a document written in the 19th century, every bit of space on it's used because paper is so expensive. And the idea of using it in a toilet is, that's absurd, you know? You wouldn't waste it like that. So you actually used, you used up, the traditional thing of the old, the old Eaton's catalog was used in the outhouse. Well, the price of paper comes down in different process, but also there's a very strong demand, isn't there? Because there's a value here about cleanliness. We are much cleaner, and we value cleanliness far more than the 19th century folks did. And the idea of reusing scrap paper, that's ridiculous. So you have the rise of purpose-built paper, if you will, for a very specific purpose. So it's actually a relatively recent development. I mean, you can look at, it goes back into the 19th century, but I mean, it's not hard to talk to people who were still using the Eaton's catalog in the 1940s. So it's a relatively recent phenomenon. And I'm sure, once again, 150 years from now, we'll all be laughing. We'll all be laughing at these weirdos who wasted perfectly good trees on toilet paper. What a bizarre notion. It has less to do with technology and more to do with values, less to do with the thing than what we decide to spend, what we value and wish to spend resources on. It's nervous laughter, and it's that kind of, oh, aren't we being daring talking about toilets? It's this discretion thing again. It's a privacy issue again. But let's face it, it's generated a huge amount of interest. We've been putting exhibits on here at the museum for a long time. We've never made the front page of the Spectator, which we did with this exhibit. So as I say, that's that conflicted view we have. As I've said to a lot of people, it's very hard to be serious about this topic. This, as you say, the joking kind of covers maybe some embarrassment. Mm-hmm. But why not talk about this? Why not talk about this? This is a technology we all have, we all share. One of the things that is perhaps happening in sort of post-industrialism is we're moving away from really dominant technologies into sort of a fracturing of alternative technologies. So I think we'll probably see an era when the conventional flush toilet will survive. It'll be far more efficient from a water usage point of view. It'll be much smaller but also much more diverse in design. It'll be much more particular to meet individual needs. But you'll also see the rise of alternatives in terms of composting toilets, in terms of toilets that have other ways of dealing with the waste, perhaps even non-water-based systems. You see that as soon as you get out of major urban areas, you're seeing that fairly commonly now. And I think that trend's going to continue as we become very conscious of and start to see as a real major issue the whole things getting into the groundwater. We're starting to try and break that barrier so stuff doesn't get into the groundwater, and there are a number of different ways of doing it. What's important is that society, or at least groups within the society, start to say that's something worth spending resources on. What would have been once again 20 years ago, somebody who was using a composting toilet, it was, oh, you know, you can't afford to have a flush toilet and a septic tank and you're, you know. Now it's kind of the reverse. It's, oh, wow, aren't you cutting edge? Aren't you forward thinking? And I'm sure that the modern day composting toilet works a lot better than the ones I used 20 years ago. So in areas where, think of a small town growing as a result of, you know, suburbanization, you know, people moving out into these towns, and the pressure on the sewage treatment facilities in these areas, it becomes enormous, and in fact exceeding their tax base. So they've got to look at different ways. They can't simply keep expanding the sewage lagoon. They can't afford to do that. So they're start looking at alternative technologies, and obviously that's everything we've just been talking about, including, you know, snowfluent and composting toilets and stuff like that. I really think that's a future, and that really reflects a change from the 19th and early 20th centuries, when we thought in terms of large-scale systems that everybody was part of, you know, the traditional public waterworks, into systems that are a little bit more particular and a little bit more tailored, still with a looking at sort of common regulations and common values, but a little less sort of, I think, of almost sort of central planning Stalinist views of public utilities. I think that day may be done.
You are listening to Radio Free School on CFMU.
Are you ready to order yet, sir?
No, sorry, I'm still waiting for my friend. No, wait, here he is now. Welcome back. How long were you gone? 45 minutes? Is this what they call a power lunch over at Wilmot Ross?
I was in the washroom.
Wonderful. Wonderful. This leaves us with exactly, what, 15 minutes to order, eat, and discuss the new subdivision. Waiter, I'll have the... Where'd he go? Great. Now the waiter's gone to... Look, what is the matter with you? You look... Are you sick or something?
No,
you're not sick? And you spend a meal break in the washroom, leaving me sitting here for 3/4 of an hour getting refills of water and chewing on breadsticks.
I shit a piece of pie.
Look, if your people aren't interested in developing the land, you can just... Excuse me?
I shit a piece of pie.
Thank you! Thank you for sharing that with me. I am delighted that yesterday's dessert has finally passed.
But I never eat pie. I just dumped a solid piece.
Thank you! Thank you! I was hoping you'd be a fascinating luncheon companion. But little did I dream you'd be regaling me with the consistency of your bowel movements.
It was a piece of pie.
I don't care what it looked like.
No, it didn't just look like pie. It was a serving of pie.
It was a serving of pie.
Right.
Real pie.
A nice serving of real pie.
Flaky crust, juicy filling?
Big round blueberries.
Thank you! Thank you!
It's a miracle!
It's a miracle? God blessed your sphincter so it could issue dessert treats? Look, you still got 15 minutes. Go make it a la mode.
But I can't even bake a pie!
So God put an easy bake oven in your lower colon?
Well, you believe me, right?
Oh, I believe you. Absolutely, I believe you. You invite me here to Rugantino's to discuss Sunny Ridge Subdivision, and then you bolt off to the can to give birth to a pastry. You're the Betty Crocker of the bathroom. Of course, I believe you. Nothing not to believe.
Fine. If this isn't a piece of pie, what is it?
Well, that's... Oh, God, he's carrying it. The guy carries it in his pocket. Get it off the table!
It's a piece of pie!
Forgive me if we don't shake hands on this deal, okay?
I can make shit that looks like food!
Yeah, so can my mother. Big deal. Bob, your VP investment division for Wilmot Ross. You can't spend lunches fishing crusty turds out of Kaibos.
This pie is proof!
It's proof that you carry shit in your pocket!
Shh. It's pie!
It's poo!
Okay, fine. If I'm wrong, you tell me where it came from.
I don't know. Maybe somebody ordered pie. It tasted stale. They ditched it in the toilet. Oh, God, there's a bite out of it. Thank you.
Well, I had to find out if it's pie.
I feel sick.
I'm a freak. What am I going to do? I could lose my job, my wife, the kids. You can't tell anybody about this. Promise.
What am I going to say? Did a lunch the other day with Bob Lockhart. He shit a dessert from his ass. Took a bite out of it, brought it back to the table, and waved it under my nose. Trust me, Bob, my lips are sealed.
Excuse me, gentlemen. Are you ready to order now?
I seem to have lost my appetite. I'll have a coffee, thanks.
Yeah, coffee here, too. Yeah. That's fine, thanks.
Would you like to see the dessert tray?
No, really.
You are listening to Radio Free School on CFMU.
Hello, my name is Rodrigo Venturelli, and I'm one of the many farmers, Flamby Organic Farm in West Flamborough, right near Rockton. It's in the Beverly Swamp. It's a lowland forest. It's a really neat little spot to have a farm. The way we use manure is we have a friend down the street who spends most of his time making compost out of manure, out of sheep manure, out of cattle and horse manure. He takes a lot of leaf mulch, all kinds of debris, and he turns it into soil. This is the natural process. He, through thermophilic activity, it's like a natural cooking of all the manure. The matter is rendered fertile through a natural cooking process, and then we put it on the fields, and only then is it safe to use as fertilizer for the plants. We compost it first, and it turns from manure into usable soil. And then we spread it over the fields. Sometimes we put our little seedlings into a big pot of this compost, and then we put that, by hand, we put those into the fields, and so that adds organic matter. That's what we want from the poo, is we want to eventually turn it into soil, which in turn is used by the plants to grow, to feed us. You can't use fresh poo, you know? It'll burn things, it carries a lot of pathogens, it can get stinky and unhealthy. Human waste can be used, and throughout history, over the last many thousands of years, that's the way we did it, you know? It's like people would actually collect the poo, and they would take it to certain areas, and they would compost it. Some people compost, some not, but they would compost it, make it healthy, usable, and then they would spread it on their fields, and they would increase the growth of their plants. Poo is everything. It's what we eat. Poo is just a part of a cycle. So it's like you can start the cycle anywhere. If you want to start it in the soil, you put your seeds in the soil, it grows into a plant, you eat that plant, it goes through your body, it comes out your body, and you can't just stop right there, because there's only a certain amount of energy in the world. You know, we can't go to outer space and get food. You know, we have to take, we're just a part of that cycle. Just because it goes through us doesn't mean it has to stop, you know, or be put in these huge containers and shocked with chemicals. It has to be given back to the land in a healthy process, or else the earth dies, it starves to death.
Leaves doesn't matter. has always been rock, and so it is, and so it shall be. Within the context of neo-rock, we must open up our eyes and seize and rend the veil of smoke which man calls order. Pollution is a necessary result of the inability of man to reform and transform waste. The transformation of waste. The transformation of waste. The transformation of waste. Of waste is perhaps the oldest preoccupation of man. Man being the chosen ally must be reconnected via shit. At all costs, you hung with us in this dream of the task of the alchemist to create from the clay of man, and to recreate from the excretion of man, pure and then soften in solid gold. All must not be art. Some art we must disintegrate.
I'm gonna wrap myself in paper. I'm gonna daub myself with glue. Stick some stamps on the top of my head. I'm gonna mail myself to you.
Contact Radio Free School at grassroots@hwcn.org or mail P.O. Box 19, 1280 Main Street West, Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, L8S1. C O.